Presented by DogNation.com in partnership with the AJC, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We have a lot to do today. We're glad to have you with us on Dog Nation Daily. Here's what's coming up. Of course, it's Wednesday, and every Wednesday for the last few weeks, we've been looking ahead to one of Georgia's 2017 opponents. We have a very special guest to do that with today. We'll talk to you about that coming up in just a moment. I also have an update on yesterday's big announcement, the Dog Nation invasion that we told you about. Some good news, maybe, some bad news, kind of, but a lot of news to get to on the Dog Nation invasion. And we'll do all that coming up in just a moment. Also, speaking of bad news, I hate to say this, but I guess maybe another small piece of bad news for UGA recruiting. We'll try to figure out what this means coming up in just a few minutes as well. As I told you, we are loaded here today on Dog Nation Daily. Before we get to any of that, though, you know, the talk for Georgia so far this spring has been what looks to be an improved UGA offense. They seem to be getting the best of the Georgia defense, both during practice and during scrimmages, and there are a lot of reasons why maybe this is true. It's been suggested that maybe a bigger offensive line. You know, Kirby Smart talked about the beef that he's using at the guard positions right now with Pat Allen and Solomon Kinley before Kinley was dealing with a little bit of an injury. Maybe that extra beef is just making the offensive line more effective. You can also point to the fact that Nick Chubb's healthier now than he was. And I know that Chubb, I guess, supposedly didn't get any carries during the scrimmage on Saturday, but overall, when he has gone up against this Georgia defense, the fact that he's a little healthier, maybe that has just made for a more effective Georgia offense. But the other reason why maybe the Georgia offense is doing a little better this spring, especially in comparison to the Georgia defense, might have a little something to do with Jacob Eason. Jacob Eason may just be a better quarterback moving into his sophomore season than he was as a freshman. And the reason why that might be true might seem obvious, and yet Jacob Eason was talking about that with ESPN just a couple of days ago, mentioning the fact that the experience that Eason got last year has made a night and day difference for him moving into this his sophomore season. Here's how Eason told it to ESPN.
The experience in general has been tremendous for me because the biggest thing is the speed of the game. You know, going against our defense every day, Coach Kirby, you know, working with our defense to give me the looks that are going to make me better. It's been huge. And also the in-game experience, the two-minute drives, the four-minute situations, all of it has had a huge effect on me. And I feel a lot more comfortable this spring as opposed to last spring.
And listen, if you're a Georgia fan, you hear Jacob Eason saying that to ESPN. I think the thing that you say is, well, I hope that is true. I mean, I hope that should be the case. I hope that it is true. And you start thinking ahead to what we'll see on G-Day on April the 22nd, and there ought to be evidence of exactly what Jacob Eason was just talking about right there, especially in comparison to Jake Fromm, who was an Uber recruit himself coming out of high school for the class of 2017, but doesn't have the luxury of almost a full year being Georgia's starting quarterback. So if you think about what we'll all see from our various vantage points inside Sanford Stadium on that G-Day Saturday, we ought to see Jacob Eason, and frankly, looking head and shoulders more comfortable than Jake Fromm. Much more in command of the Georgia offense. And the guy that's obvious, even to, you know, a non-trained eye, obvious that Eason is the better of the two quarterbacks on that day. And listen, I don't say that as someone that doesn't root for Jake Fromm. I do root for Jake Fromm. I'm incredibly excited about what his future might be at the University of Georgia. I think all Georgia fans agree with that. But I'm suggesting that Georgia fans should also agree that on this particular Saturday, on April 22nd, it ought to be Fromm taking a backseat to Eason, who's much more in charge and much more in control of the UGA offense. And if we see that for ourselves with our own eyes on G-Day, well, I guess the precursor to that is what Chip Tower said on Dog Nation Daily when he joined us this past Monday, that some of his sources, some of the whispers and rumors around the scrimmage on Saturday suggest that Eason outplaying Fromm, that may have already happened. Here's how Chip explained it on Monday.
Now, my understanding since the scrimmage was that the reality was Jacob Eason looked really, really good Saturday, and Jake Fromm looked really ordinary. Now, I can't, you know, confirm that because sure, I'm not able to see it for myself. So that's why we turn out, right? I mean, that's why we want to show up. I think the reality is Jacob Eason had 12 starts, 13 games under his belt, all that off-season work, all that head start on Jake Fromm to understand and master the playbook. That's a lot of ground to make up. And this is the first time we really started to hear some unfettered praise for Jacob Eason. And I would imagine, just based on everything that's taken place since he first became Georgia's starter in game two of last season, it makes sense that he probably looks the best of everybody right now.
So the experience that Jacob Eason gained last year, potentially giving him a leg up on Jake Fromm, apparently some people may have seen that this past Saturday in the controlled scrimmage at Sanford Stadium. We may all get to see that on April 22nd for G-Day. But it's not just Eason's battle with Fromm where the experience ought to matter. How about when you get into the rigors of an SEC season this year? If Georgia is indeed the favorite to win the SEC East, and if a division crown is indeed what Georgia gets by the end of the season, it could very well be that Jacob Eason's experience is the X factor, the deciding factor that kind of tips the balance in Georgia's favor here. I mean, think about the Dogs' chief competition in the SEC East right now. How about Florida? You know, ESPN's FPI metric gives the Gators a 31% chance of winning the East. That's just a few ticks below Georgia, who's the favorite at 37%. Well, what is the difference between Georgia and Florida? Apparently, the only significant difference is that Georgia brings back a starter quarterback in Jacob Eason, who got an experience worth last year in 2016, whereas Florida's probably going to have Felipe Franks starting at quarterback, a guy who won't have any of the same experience that Jacob Eason has. Same thing for Tennessee. Georgia favored over Tennessee by a lot of these metrics, and the big difference the Dogs may have against and compared to Tennessee, the big advantage, maybe the fact that Tennessee's going to have an inexperienced quarterback. Whether it be Quentin Dormany or Jared Garantano, one way or another, we know that Jacob Eason's going to have more experience than either of those two guys, and maybe he uses it to his advantage. Even in the case with the Auburn Tigers, who have Jared Stidham, who played some before transferring from Baylor, this will still be his first kind of moment in the sun in the SEC. As you all know, the SEC defenses are very different from what Stidham encountered at the Big 12, what he practiced against every day when he was at Baylor. That's just not hype. That's the actual truth. And getting acclimated to those SEC defenses may take Stidham a moment or two. Jacob Eason shouldn't have the same hiccups because he lived through all of that in 2016. The bottom line for me is the same level of experience that Jacob Eason might be using right now to kind of clearly delineate him from Jake Fromm and the pecking order of Georgia quarterbacks. I'm hopeful that Eason can use some of that same experience in the SEC battles this season, certainly against Florida and Tennessee, and maybe also against Auburn as well, to prove that a year's worth of starting in 2016 has made Jacob Eason a much better quarterback in 2017. You know, there's a couple awful cliches that coaches use all the time. They'll say, hey, you can't coach up talent. You either have it or you don't, and they'll say that there's also no substitute for experience. Well, in the case of Jacob Eason moving in this upcoming season, he's actually got both. The talent's unquestioned, and now he's got the experience too, and maybe you can use both those aspects of his game to his advantage to be a much better quarterback here in 2017. My name's Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Available to you in podcast form on iTunes or at dognation.com, SoundCloud as well. On the radio every day in Athens on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We air there at noon. On Facebook Live every morning on the Dog Nation Facebook page at 10 a.m. And, of course, all our spring practice coverage from the University of Georgia is brought to you by Georgia United Credit Union. And, you know, there are a lot of financial questions that can kind of keep you up tonight and really wake you up kind of worried about each and every day. Like, am I in the right job? Is this the right time to buy a house? How do I manage my student loans? Who you turn to matters when it comes to your money. You need a financial partner like Georgia United Credit Union who's committed to helping you succeed. A partner who knows the unique stresses you face when it comes to finances. At Georgia United, the things that are important to you become just as important to us. Shared strength is the confidence of knowing you're going to get a great deal on your vehicle loan, consistently strong returns and deposits, and home loan products designed with you in mind. All made possible by neighbors uniting with neighbors to reach common goals. We're committed to putting you first. We know that the more you succeed, the more the entire community is going to benefit. That's what makes us so much more than a bank. We are United. Georgia United Credit Union, join us. I'll also tell you now, 198 days away from Georgia, Florida, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party coming up in Jacksonville later on the month of October. We believe a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. If you believe that too, please check out shopdognation.com. You can get your very own Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirts. I was told yesterday by some of the people that help us out with this, the store is completely restocked now. All the sizes are back in. I know I've had to come back and tell you all that a bunch. We have just been selling a lot of these lately. So, and really all since we announced them, we sell dozens and dozens each week. But we have restocked the store. They're there for you. So please check that out at shopdognation.com. You can get your very own Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirt. And by the way, free shipping when you order those from ShopDogNation.com. So please check that out. All right, before we get to our special guest today, which is Benjamin Wolk, we'll preview Georgia's game this November against the Auburn Tigers with him. Ben's also a great recruiting reporter. So we're going to talk to Benjamin about some of those issues kind of lingering for UGA recruiting right now, maybe behind schedule for the 2018 class. What's Ben's reaction to all that? We'll get that with him coming up. I'll also tell you why maybe there's another piece of bad news for Georgia out there in the recruiting trail. It's something that Jeff Sintel wrote about yesterday at DogNation.com. We'll talk all about that in the next couple of minutes. Before any of that, though, do want to take a moment to update the Dog Nation invasion. You know, we gave the big announcement on yesterday's show about the big Dog Nation invasion to South Bend for the Notre Dame game. It's for people who are already going to be in Chicago, taking the bus from Chicago over to South Bend. The entire thing's brought to you by Kroger, U.S. Auto Sales, and R.S. Andrews. Tickets were $75, and that got you, you know, an open bar on the bus, tailgating during the day, just a really luxury experience in so many ways, including transportation back from South Bend to Chicago, hopefully a celebratory bus with Dog Nation coming back after the invasion with a victory over the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. We knew that it was a great offer. We knew it was going to be a ton of fun. It was so much fun that we sold out literally in a couple of hours. So for those of you that have tried to get in to get your Dog Nation invasion tickets, we have completely sold out of these. However, here's what we're doing. Now, this is not a promise. This is a, hey, we're going to try to do this and see what we can do. If you go to the link for Dog Nation at DogNation.com for the Dog Nation invasion, you know, post, you can get on a waiting list. And right now we have dozens and dozens and dozens of people already in this waiting list. But go ahead and add your name to that waiting list, because what we're going to try to do, if we can secure this with some of our partners there in the city of Chicago, we're going to try to secure a third bus for the Dog Nation invasion. And, you know, we'll see what we do about pricing. We'll see about all that kind of stuff. But the good news is we may be able to do a third bus here for the Dog Nation invasion for people who tried to get on board with this yesterday, weren't able to do so. And, you know, for those of you who've asked, how is it you can offer so much? The food, the bar, the tailgating, how can you do all of that for the price this was listed at yesterday? Frankly, it would only be possible because of the three great sponsors that we have on this. So I want to thank Kroger, want to thank U.S. Auto Sales, want to thank R.S. Andrews for being a part of the Dog Nation invasion to South Bend. Glad to have so many of you coming with us on that trip. Hopefully some more people can get on the waiting list. Maybe we can get a third bus, and we'll kind of see how all of this goes from there. So check out that post there at DogNation.com, and I'll look forward to seeing you in Chicago for the Dog Nation invasion, and look forward to giving you maybe one of those Dog Nation gift bags as well. Okay, so all of that will be discussed in the days ahead. For now, though, before we bring on Benjamin Wolk, I want to talk about something briefly that we talked about on yesterday's show for a moment. The fact that it seems like right now Florida may be getting a little bit of recruiting momentum. You know, we've kind of laughed at the Gators missing out in the top 20 in 2015, struggling to make outside the top 10 in 2016. We thought, you know, Jim McElwain was really falling on his face as a recruiter, and yet gets into the top 10 to close out 2017. Already ranked number one right now for the class of 2019, and maybe having some success here in 2018 that I'll tell you about more in a moment. When Jeff Sintel was on Dog Nation Daily yesterday, I asked him about that. Jeff, what's going on here with Florida? Is Jim McElwain proving himself to be a recruiter?
That's the theory, and that's the worry. But, like, right now, I don't see Florida having a really established quarterback in 2019 or 2018 yet. I think they're going to trend well to get Joe Milton, who's down there in Florida as well, but I don't see the big-time receivers yet, and that's the one thing about Florida, about putting both sides of the ball together. They're getting a couple of guys, but they're not getting those impact guys yet. You know, Florida is a school that, let's face it, I mean, they just creeped into having the number 10 recruiting class in the country. Last year with McElwain, they closed late to get the number 10 with like four stars on signing day, a couple of other three stars. And believe it or not, that was the first top 10 class that McElwain had ever had at Florida. So I just don't think, you know, while McElwain has had the on-field success, he hasn't recruited like even Mark Richt did at Georgia, much less what Kirby Smart did last year. And I think there's a lot of jobs open also at Florida. If you saw last year, freshman Chauncey Gardner came to the Gators, and he was named the MVP of the bowl game. That's something that the recruits are looking to right now, is they like seeing these things when coaches can trot out these bullet points that impress them, that make them think they have a true opportunity there, which I believe they do.
And that opportunity may have gotten the attention of one of the five-star prospects that George was hoping for the class of 2018. thought it was interesting that Jeff Sintel at DogNation.com yesterday wrote about Tyreek Johnson, one of those guys, out-of-state prospect, but a player that a lot of Georgia fans were hoping for quite some time. Apparently right now, if Tyreek Johnson had to make his decision, Georgia at one point was kind of listed as one of his top favorites. Maybe not the case right now. Maybe Florida's kind of snuck in there in that conversation, Miami, maybe Miami a little bit too, also Ohio State. But it's another example maybe of all of a sudden Jim McElwain at Florida starting to build some recruiting momentum. Now, I don't know what to make of that. I don't know where this goes from here when it comes to Florida. I do know this, though. Georgia right now is a program in desperate need of some good news when it comes to recruiting. Now, we're going to talk to our next guest about that, Benjamin Wolk, who knows the recruiting scene in the SEC as well as anyone. And he also helps us preview the Auburn Tigers as well. It's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, and hope you enjoy the conversation here with Benjamin Wolk. And I'll say hello to Benjamin Wolk here on Dog Nation Daily. He covers Auburn recruiting, the Auburn Tigers there for SECCountry.com. And he knows, as I said, the recruiting situation on the SEC as well as anyone. He's always a good friend of Dog Nation Daily as well. Benjamin, welcome to the program today. How you doing?
Brandon, always great to be here. Good talking with you.
Yeah, it's good talking with you too. And I want to get into the Georgia recruiting situation in a moment. You may have heard some of what I just had to say right there. Before we get into that, though, let's talk about Auburn. We know this is going to be one of Georgia's most crucial games when it's played. I think it's on paper clearly Georgia's toughest game. And, you know, after the spring game for Auburn on Saturday, the rise of Jared Stidham, the talk that maybe, you know, hey, Auburn a legitimate contender in the SEC, is this a situation where Auburn kind of once again overhyped maybe the way we saw in 2015, or are the Tigers here a legitimate threat to Alabama in the SEC West here this season?
Yeah, Auburn made your preseason prediction look pretty good on Saturday, didn't they?
Yeah, no doubt. I've called them as the team that's going to win the West, and maybe after that spring game on Saturday, I'm not looking so dumb for that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's definitely you know, a strong base to the conversation that, you know, Auburn is a legitimate contender in the SEC West this year. Obviously, I don't want to get too ahead of myself after a spring game, but you saw, I mean, Kevin Steele, what they've got going on their defense right now, you're not, obviously, you lose on the defensive line, Montrevious Adams and Carl Lawson, but I think that the depth at defensive line for Auburn this year is much better than it was last year. So on the defensive side of the ball, it's a little thin in the secondary, but that's also where most of Auburn's experience is as well, with Trey Matthews, Nick Ruffin, guys like that on the back end. So defensively, Auburn's set. The big question is, what is Auburn going to be able to do offensively with a new offensive coordinator and potentially a new quarterback as well? I mean, Jarrett Stidham looked the part. He's looked the part all through spring just from a leadership standpoint. But to finally be able to go out there and see him in Jordan-Hare Stadium, see what he's actually capable of doing, I mean, he can really sling the ball around the yard. And, you know, Auburn, Nate Craig Myers, wide receiver who was once the number one overall player in the nation, he really wasn't healthy much of his freshman year. And you could see that he's sort of taken that next step as well. And for Jarrett Stidham to have a weapon like that is key. Now, coaches didn't want to name a starting quarterback on Saturday, but I don't feel like they really had to. I think most people were able to figure that one out for themselves.
You mentioned Chip Lindsey, and I want to talk to you about him in just a moment, but let me go back to Jared Stidham here before we get to that. You know, I'm a big believer in Stidham, too. I think he's going to make Auburn a really prolific offense this season. I guess the one pushback that I sometimes get on Twitter, though, when I've talked up Stidham is, well, you know, people said the same thing about Jeremy Johnson back in 2015. For the naysayers out there, what makes Stidham's situation different from what maybe Auburn went through back in 2015 with Jeremy Johnson? Or is that a legitimate point to bring up?
Well, I think the big difference is Jeremy Johnson had never averaged 300 yards passing a game during his freshman season when he was playing. I mean, granted, that was in the Big 12. You're getting a little bit different look on defense than you will be in the SEC, but I mean, not to say that Jeremy Johnson hadn't come in, you know, to replace Nick Marshall and shown some signs, but Jarrett Stidham was playing full game, you know, at Baylor, and he was throwing the ball all over the field. I mean, it's obviously a fair point to bring up, but I'm also not one to draw comparisons to past situations. I mean, I don't really think that Jarrett Stidham and Jeremy Johnson in any way are the same kind of person, same kind of quarterback, so I don't know if it's really fair to draw conclusions to one another just because they both are going to be wearing Auburn uniforms. But it's a fair point to bring up. I can understand, you know, people have seen Auburn sort of get ahead of themselves at the quarterback position before, but you can also just get a sense of confidence from players and coaches, and they had that with Jeremy Johnson too, but you can get a sense of confidence from players and coaches post-game on Saturday, and really just throughout this entire spring, that they feel really, really good about the personnel that they have right now.
How different do you think this Auburn offense is going to end up looking? You know, Chip Lindsey transitioning to him from Rhett Lashley, and was also, you know, for many years thought to be just Gus Malzahn's offense. Do you think it's going to be a noticeable difference with Lindsey? I guess the best way to identify that is the ratio of pass plays to running plays?
Yeah, well, definitely just throughout the spring as a whole and all their scrimmages, you know, Gus has said throughout the spring that generally he likes a, in the past, he's like a 70-30 run to pass ratio. This spring they were probably closer to 60-40, maybe even a little below 60-40. So they're trending more towards passing the ball, but they're still a run first offense, and I feel like that'll happen as long as Gus Malzahn is the head coach at Auburn. That's his style, and that's the way things are going to be. But he's given over the reins to Chip Lindsey, and I mean, you saw it on Saturday. The big difference, I would say, from this, how it looked on Saturday compared to previous years, was just how many different wide receivers were getting involved. I mean, in the past, it's generally been Auburn's got the one downfield wide receiver, and then they probably got another guy on the perimeter, and they're sort of working those two. But Auburn had wide receivers that were lining up on the perimeter and the slot that were all over the field, and everybody was getting involved. So I think that so far, that's really the only sign that it's the only proof that I've gotten that it's going to look somewhat different. I think the other position where you could start to see things be a little bit different is the tight end position for Auburn. It's been a position that hasn't been used much over the past three seasons at Auburn. And some of that has been from a personnel standpoint. They just haven't had the right tight end. Chip Lindsey wants a tight end that can, you know, be attached to the line of scrimmage and be there as a blocker, but they can also stretch him out wide and can run some routes out on the perimeter as well. Right now, Auburn only has two tight ends on the roster. One's more of a blocking type guy, and one's a junior college transfer that really has only played wide receiver in the past anyway. So I think that going forward, Auburn's going to be looking for tight ends that are sort of a combination of both of the guys that Auburn has on the roster right now. So for the time being, I don't know how much they're going to really be able to do that just because of the personnel. But going forward, I think that you could see a lot more of the tight end in this Auburn offense.
I want to talk to you about the situation with UGA recruiting in a moment, because nobody knows the situation around the SEC as well as you. You certainly have been covering it very closely here for a while. Before that, though, one more thing about Auburn and Georgia's game against that team in November. You know, when these teams play each other, you know, the one thing you can't help but notice from the Georgia side of things is how many names in that Auburn defense are well known to UGA fans who also, you know, follow recruiting. Whether it be Derrick Brown, who Georgia just missed out on, Dontavius Russell, that a lot of Georgia fans going back to the year before thought the Dogs might get, maybe even Markavius Bryant to the extent that he could be involved in the situation there for Auburn as a freshman. It's a lot of names for the Auburn defense that, you know, were in-state products from Georgia. Kevin Steele had a pretty good year as defensive coordinator year one. You expect this defense to take that next step here in year two as well?
Yeah, well, and they, you know, they were a great defense last year as well, and I, you know, coming into the season, a lot of guys felt really confident that this was going to be a good defense, and I don't want to say that people were laughing it off, but they'd seen what Auburn had done defensively the previous two seasons, and it really didn't jump off the page to you. They came out and ended up having, you know, one of the best defenses in the SEC, and there were some great defenses in the SEC last year. But they don't really – I mean, they lost – it's weird because they lost Montrevious Adams and Carl Lawson, and you would think if you lose two guys of that caliber that you're going to have to take a step back. But Rodney Garner, no one recruits his position group better than Rodney Garner does on Auburn's defensive line. So, Georgia fans should know that as well as anyone, his ability to recruit his position group. And for him to be able to lose those two guys and their defensive line might actually take a step up just sort of says a lot about the direction that this Auburn defense is headed. I mean, obviously Kevin Steele's done a great job, but all the position coaches, Travis Williams at linebacker, Rodney Garner on the defensive line, Wesley McGriff before he left for Ole Miss's defensive coordinator job. I mean, all of those guys did such a good job of recruiting their position group that they've got so much depth that they're sort of starting to get into that conversation, and people might not even realize it really yet, but they're sort of starting to get into that Alabama conversation of, you can lose guys like Montrevious Adams and Carl Lawson, and you might even improve the next year.
All right, let me turn to recruiting here for a moment. That's obviously the beat that you know very well. And, you know, for a lot of Georgia fans, there's a lot of anxious, nervous moments right now. After being number three in the 24/7 sports composite team ranking for number three, or I should say for 2017, number three in 2017. So far here in 2018, things just not going quite as well. Georgia, as you know, only two commitments right now. Recently got the decommitment of Max Vrai, one of those big names that I think Georgia fans are maybe hoping might be out there. Tyreek Johnson, based on what Jeff Sintel reported Dog Nation yesterday, looks like Johnson's kind of looking around elsewhere at the moment. How much anxiety do you think is legitimate for Georgia fans here? But the fact that thus far the 2018 class is just not coming together as well as 2017 did.
I guess it kind of depends on where some of that anxiety is stemming from. I mean, if the anxiety is there because Georgia fans feel that they're not going to end up with the number three class in the country again, then maybe there is some, you know, need for that anxiety. But I also feel like getting the number three class in the country, you know, that's a really high bar to set. I mean, it's hard to get that 2 years in a row. I mean, you don't see many programs. I mean, Ohio State and Alabama are really the only two programs in the country right now that are recruiting at that level every single year. So obviously in 2017, or, you know, in the 2017 recruiting class, oh, there were a lot of stars aligning. You had a new coaching staff. You had a great crop of in-state talent. I mean, there is every year, but last year in particular was a really strong group of in-state talent. And it just worked out in 2017 for Georgia to go up there and get the number three recruiting class in the nation. Now, 2018, things haven't started off that great. But, I mean, you really look around the SEC, there's not many programs that have, and really across the country, I mean, I think there's only a handful of teams so far that have double-digit commitments. So, I mean, it's not like there's a time. I mean, Auburn picked up two commitments on Saturday, and now they're up to six. And they're ranked 13th in the country. So, I mean, once you start adding some numbers, adding some bodies, I mean, Georgia's going to climb up, you know, steadily climb up the recruiting rankings just because that's what happens when you start adding commits. I think Auburn, or, you know, because of the nature of how Georgia fared last year, you know, everyone's going to be looking for, you know, a bunch of five stars, a bunch of high four stars. And I think that this might be a class where, you know, fans might need to rely and trust in Georgia's coaching staff's evaluations and just realize they might get some of these high stars, some of these low four stars that maybe these recruiting services haven't evaluated or scouted as well, but Georgia's coaching staff is going to do the evaluations that they need to do and get the guys that they need to do. Now, I think Georgia is a program that should always just expect to get a top 10 class. Now, top three, you know, is not always easy to do. It might be a little bit of a stretch. But I think Georgia can easily work their way into a top 10 class this year. I mean, they've done it for years now. They've ended up in the top 10. So, you know, I don't think that it's time to sweat yet. I think that obviously the coaching staff's got a lot of work to do, but I think that a lot of coaching staffs across the country still have a lot of work to do to get where they want to get in recruiting for the 2018 cycle.
I think that's all very well said, and here's my response to that, and this will be my last question for you, Benjamin. We always appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily. You know, when you look at the decommitment of Max Vrai, maybe he was turned off by the fact that Georgia signed so many offensive linemen for the 2017 class. When you hear about Tyreek Johnson maybe interested in other places, maybe he's turned off by the fact that Georgia signed so many defensive backs for the class of 2017. And in 2017, Georgia really had something pretty nice to sell. Early playing time promises at a lot of positions. But what you see in 2018 is the need to try to sell something else. And frankly, for a program like Georgia, a high-profile SEC institution, if you're selling early playing time, that's a really easy sell for a lot of top prospects. But how do you do what Alabama has done, which is sell players on coming here and contributing to our depth and competing for your chance to play against other really good players? You know, that's the next big frontier for Kirby Smart. Can you recruit elite players when you don't have the promise of early playing time to offer?
Yeah, well, and, I mean, that's sort of the struggle that many college programs run into. I mean, Alabama really seems like the only one that is able to convince top-tier guys to come in and sit for, you know, years at a time. A lot of these programs feel like when they get these five stars, I mean, I take Georgia's class most recently, for example. I feel like the Georgia fan base wants all these offensive linemen, Isaiah Wilson, Andrew Thomas. They want all these guys to come in and play immediately.
Yeah.
And really, it's better for your program if these top-tier guys are coming in and sitting a year because they're getting that experience, they're seeing how it should be done, and it says that you have that depth on your roster as is. I mean, I don't think that Georgia fans will really be expecting DeAndre Swift to come in and rush for 1,000 yards this season because, you know, he's got Nick Chubb and Sony Michel ahead of him, and not to mention some of the other guys are already on the roster. So, you know, you've got to find a way, and it's not easy to do. I don't have an answer. I'm not a, I mean, I don't recruit guys to come play college football, obviously. So I don't know what the answer is necessarily, but you've got to find a way to build that culture. And when you build that culture that guys know coming in, okay, we're going to sit behind whoever it may be, Isaiah Wilson for 2 years, and watch what it, you know, watch what I need to do to become a next level left tackle. I mean, that's sort of what you have to develop, and it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, this coaching staff's been in place for a year, and you know, you look at the 2018 cycle, things might not be going that well, but it looks like 2019 has a chance to be, you know, a top tier class for Georgia. And if they can, you know, get two recruiting cycles in a 3 year span, 2017 and 2019, that are of that, you know, top three, top two, top one caliber, then you sort of are starting to build that culture a little bit.
Benjamin, it's always great to have you here on Dog Nation Daily. We love your work at SECCountry.com as well, and we'll hope to have you here on the show again very soon.
Awesome, Brandon. Always enjoy it.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff there, talking some recruiting and really some previewing the game against Auburn there with Benjamin Walk. He's a great reporter there for SECCountry.com and a good friend of Dog Nation Daily. Always great to have him on the program. And, you know, before we dive into our SEC Through, the one thing that does come to mind about previewing Georgia's game against Auburn is what you have to imagine is just a growing storyline there in what they call the loveliest village on the plains. You can decide for yourself how lovely you think it is. But nonetheless, what has to be a growing storyline is the fact that that losing streak that Auburn has to Georgia has to be sticking in their side at the moment. I know that Auburn fans are frustrated about the state of the Iron Bowl rivalry too, but really, you know, the losing streak to Georgia has got to feel, you know, just as significant as that right now at the moment. You know, the degree to which that Georgia's really dominated that series has got to be a real issue for Auburn. So you imagine when you get towards November, you know that Auburn fans getting that game back at Jordan-Hare Stadium going to be talking about that a lot this season, and you hope that when Georgia gets to that point that Georgia is in a position to kind of do some crowing and doing some talking as well. I do believe that Auburn's going to be ranked in the top 10 when those two teams play. Hope to see Georgia in that same spot there. Time for the SEC Through. It's brought to you by SECCountry.com. Hope you'll check me and let me do grammar here. Hope you'll check out Mike Johnson and me today. Mike Johnson, the former Alabama All-American. We'll do SEC Country Live with you on the SEC Country Facebook page. That comes up at 3 p.m. I hear from some of you in the comment section here on Dog Nation Daily. You're watching us on SEC Country Live. We really appreciate you doing that. We think we have a lot of fun. You know, the same stuff that we do talking Georgia here on Dog Nation Daily. We kind of talk about the entire SEC there on SEC Country Live with plenty of Georgia talk mixed in. So we hope you'll check us out for that. We'll look forward to seeing you there. One of the subjects I imagine we'll talk about on the show today is, you know, going back here to Auburn for a moment, there is, you know, Auburn was ranked very high in that FPI rating that came out from ESPN the other day, and some of those ESPN college football writers were asked which of the SEC teams kind of looked the most overrated on this rating, and of the four writers that weighed in, three of them, Edward Ashoff, David Ching, and Alex Scarborough, all weighed in to say that they thought that Auburn was going to be overrated here for this upcoming season. And maybe that ends up being true, but I think what this also speaks to is a bit of a dilemma as well for, you know, SEC fans, some Georgia fans who say, listen, every time that Auburn's expected to do something, they always fall flat on their face. Well, how do you sort of do the math on this? That on the one hand, you've got the FPI metric that's rating Auburn as a pretty good team, top five for the 2017 season, yet three ESPN writers kind of follow suit quickly on the heels of that to say that Auburn's going to be overrated. So does this kind of does that fact that the ESPN writers are predicting Auburn to be overrated, does that upend the statistical metric saying Auburn's going to be pretty good? I don't know that there's really one easy way to kind of differentiate one from the other on that. I mean, I've said before, I do think Auburn's going to win the SEC West. I think Georgia's going to get a significant challenge when that game's played in November. I think on paper, that's clearly Georgia's toughest game. Another story I want to get to here, in speaking of recruiting, you know, we just talked a lot about Georgia's recruiting situation, what it's not doing for the class of 2018, just too committed at the moment. Georgia ranked outside the top 40, barely in the top 50 right now. And really, Alabama's not that far off. I thought Chris Kirshner had an interesting piece at SECCountry.com about this, talking about the fact that thus far Alabama just has three commits so far for the 2018 class. And right now, according to the 24/7 Sports Composite Team ranking, Alabama ranked just number 21 in the country there for that. So some of the hand-wringing that you see going on at Georgia about its position in the recruiting rankings, kind of the same thing going on in Alabama right now at the moment as well. And, you know, Chris Kirshner kind of says that, you know, there may not exactly be that five-star guy out there that's uncommitted that you think Alabama's likely going to get, and yet the Crimson Tide's probably going to be fine, which really speaks to what Benjamin Wolk was also just talking about. You know, what Alabama has been able to do is the thing that I think Georgia is trying to do in 2018 and 2019 and beyond. And it's an easy sell for players when you can do like what Georgia did in 2017 to offensive tackles and offensive linemen, saying, hey, come here, you may be able to play right away. Saying to defensive backs like D'Angelo Gibbs and Richard LeCount, hey, come here to Georgia, you might be able to play right away. It is a much tougher scenario when you're saying, come here and contribute to our depth. Come here, you might be able to fit in eventually into what we have going on. You may be able to battle it out with another talented player during practice and beat him out for some playing time. That's kind of a tougher sell. That's what Alabama seems to be able to do every year. Maybe in 2018, that's the year where that catches up to the Crimson Tide. But pretty clearly, when you think about Georgia's upcoming recruiting classes in 2018, 2019, Georgia's got to find a way to sell players on something other than the promise of being able to come in here and play early, play right away. One more story I want to get to for the SEC through. You know, a little disappointing this upcoming weekend, you know, compared to what last weekend was around the SEC, what April the 22nd is going to be, really kind of a dearth of spring games. I don't know how we kind of ended up with this imbalanced schedule. You had, you know, three or four good ones last week. You'll have a few good ones, including G-Day on April 22nd. Best I can tell, just two spring games on the schedule for this weekend. You got Kentucky on Friday. You got Missouri on Saturday. I don't know that either of these games offer a whole lot in the way of excitement. Maybe a chance to see Drew Locke there from Missouri. Maybe that's worth paying attention to see if Barry Odom can put something together in his second year there in Columbia. Kentucky, though, you know, that's a chance to be maybe a somewhat dangerous team in the SEC East this season. So maybe you see some remnants of that during its spring game on Friday night. But nonetheless, we'll make that your SEC through. And as we close out the show today here, I want to give a little congratulations out to Georgia baseball. 5-1 win at Foley Field yesterday on against Georgia Tech. Now, I was reading the story at DogNation.com. I've told some of y'all before that I'm not a college baseball expert by a long shot. It's probably one of those things I need to follow a little more. I know some of you have kind of complained that we don't do enough baseball talk here on the show, and I'll admit part of the reason why we don't do enough baseball talk is because I just don't know that much about college baseball. So maybe I need to learn more about it. Maybe I need to get a little bit more plugged in. But I was reading, you know, a lot of these midweek games in college baseball, I do know this, that you know, that's not when your ace pitchers are necessarily going. I know Georgia used a lot of pitchers last night. Did so in winning fashion, getting the victory over Georgia Tech. So that kind of changes the tone a little bit, I guess, briefly for what has been kind of a pretty negative season for UGA. It always feels good to get a victory over the in-state rival Georgia Tech. So congratulations to the Diamond Dogs, and we'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.